Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tim here in the Rugby Dungeon, whilst JB and Phil get on a plane from Philadelphia back to Blighty. I'm just sat here looking at a couple of empty Barker lounges. I'm not bothered. Not bothered at all. Looked like a raucous weekend they had. But whatevs, really, really not bothered. And not bothered that they replaced me for a little Philadelphia-based podcast with David Flatman. No, not bothered about that at all. So yes, what you're about to hear is a podcast recorded whilst JB, Phil and Phil waited to go to the airport and they grabbed flats for a little bit of a natter. So we can hear about the Philadelphia adventure and I don't know if they'll have caught any other rugby. So just a general chit chat. We will be doing another podcast when we're all reunited coming your way in this feed very, very soon. And oh man, so many amazing talking points. I mean, what a weekend that was. Marcus Smith, old head on young shoulders. Wasps unbeaten record shattered. Also Edinburgh with a surprise loss at Zebre. And South Africa's pants being pulled down. What is going on there? And here's a little fact for you from the Avicii Premiership. That is the first time ever that every single team has lost at least one game in the opening three rounds. Have that. Fact. There's Billy Vunipola talking about a potential strike. There's Marla and Haskell's handbags and all sorts of other guff that we'll be getting into. But right now, let's enjoy Flats joining Phil and JB from Philadelphia before their journey home. Without me.
Hello and welcome to this, the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. Very special edition. We have one of the brightest minds in rugby, Phil Logan. How are you, Phil?
Waiting for that.
And
hello,
David
Jonathan.
Flatman, of course. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very good. How are you?
I feel like we're making history, like two podcasts colliding.
I know, yeah. Clash of the Titans, is it Clash? It's not, it's coming together.
Exactly. Yeah. If you want to get involved in the conversation, follow us on Twitter, at Rugby Podcast, or Timman's Instagram account, so look at that as well. How has the weekend been?
It's been a good weekend out here in Philly, actually. It's a funny one, wasn't it? Because there's a lot going on during the week that I don't know when you guys got over, but I got over the night before the games. There's a lot going on during the week that we don't see, and you see snippets of it online, like the players and the coaching staff are actually going out and introducing people to rugby a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's how things grow. At some point they're put somewhere where no one knows what they are. At some point they're introduced, and by definition it's new. So we don't see a lot of that. What we see was the game, and my main memory from the game is how hot it was and how...
Oh, it was so hot.
Corbs and I had to wear suits, and he turned up in a three-piece, and I was like, Brother, what are you doing? But the problem was, he'd sweated so much that he couldn't take it off. So, you know, it's kind of like... I was like, right, guys, we're going live in 10, and I was like, right, get my jacket on quick.
That man has boundless energy.
Yeah.
Energy. He never stops.
No, he loves it, yeah.
And also, I'm going to mention, he looks great in a black T-shirt.
Looks really good.
He's in good nick at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, but so would you be. So I asked him, I said, what are you doing during the week? Because I do a bit of NBC, and they fly me up and down from New York because I've got to play my family place in Miami. What else do you do? Well, I sometimes do a podcast. Have you heard that? Like, yeah. That's it. Yeah, I just train and eat. So I was like, well, actually, do you know what? I'd be in pretty good nick if I just trained and ate.
Yeah, he's actually living the dream.
Yeah, he's stolen our lives, boys.
So other than the heat, what were your kind of big takeaways from the game?
Interesting one. I wasn't party to the promotion of it, really. And there's a balance, isn't there? Because it's easy to sit at home on your sofa as a know-it-all and say, there's no one there.
Yeah.
It's a failure. It's like, well, in a sense, you are throwing rocks You know, and it's kind of like, well, how do you think you introduce something to a marketplace that is saturated, but ultimately, you know, potentially very sort of nutrient rich, if you like? It's kind of, it's potentially a really fruitful sort of environment they're introducing it to, but it's saturated with other sports, so it's going to take a long time. And do you know what? It may never happen, but the rate at which rugby union is growing in the States suggests that it might, and it doesn't have to grow that much. Like, it doesn't. What I mean, it doesn't have to establish a particularly large market share in percentage terms to, you know, actually become a reasonably sort of powerful proposition, because there are just so many bloody people here.
I'm
going to take the Tim Cockney approach to this. So, like, basically two ways to talk it. The corporate side, I think there was quite a lot of gallows humour about the whole thing at the end of the event. But if you actually went to it, it was a massive success. I mean, for the people that actually showed up, it was absolutely brilliant.
You talk to any of the US rugby, so Americans or people who live over here who are rugby fans, they are absolutely fanatical about it. They love the game, they love the opportunity to get to something like this. What needs to happen is that growth, because they are relatively small in number at the moment.
But if you think, I mean, I don't know, say you want in 20 years time you want X number of people playing rugby union in USA, well, you know, actually that will end up being a reasonably large chunk of, if you take that, just that number, that's a reasonably large chunk of Brits, or it's a reasonably large chunk of French, not so much French of course, but in terms of the USA, you are talking a tiny fraction of the population to make it actually a massive sport. Not as massive as American football or basketball or baseball, but that's not the point. No one's trying to make it bigger than that.
And there are these really good pockets. We went and played a game at Bayonne Bombers, and Bayonne Bombers are a really well established club now, but the team we were playing against, Morris, most of their team actually come up through their youth system.
Yeah, so they were
crazy. And they were probably the players.
Yeah. They were telling us that about 15, 20 years ago, they put in place a proper training programme for kids around that area. And some of their players, they had some really handy players who are now early 20s, are a product of that system.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing that needs to happen a little bit more as well.
What do we actually think of the game?
Well, do you know what? I actually thought, I mentioned the heat earlier in jest, but I think sweat dominated this game.
Like,
I haven't seen, I don't know what the numbers are, but I'm just this anecdotally, purely anecdotally, I don't think I've seen as many basic handling errors in an elite game of rugby in a long time.
Really?
And I don't think that is necessarily all about skill. I think it's such a, I mean, I went on the pitch afterwards to do the TV stuff, and the state of the players, I mean, you've got, you can imagine the props looking pretty sweaty, but you've got guys like Will Welch, I was talking to, who's, okay, he's a massive bloke, but he's an athlete, he's a specimen. And he was just, he looked wetter than if he just got out of the river.
Yeah.
Wetter than that, and he said he was exhausted. And this is a properly fit engine of a player.
Yeah.
So he's probably going to be almost the least exhausted on the field of all the forwards. And he was exhausted, and the boys looked absolutely broken at the end of that game. And I think the ball was so sweaty, and because it was so humid, the ground was actually super greasy. So I walked on in you can imagine, a pair of gorgeous shoes. And I was slipping. And it hasn't rained one drop, and it was slippery. So for me, it was a, I mean, can we say this? It was, and you might disagree. In fact, I think you do, from the memories of what you were saying in the pub the other night. I thought it was a pretty average game, to be honest.
I agree with you. Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, there were a few handling errors. I would just say this. Saracens weren't given anything. I think a lot of handling errors came from physicality of Falcons. I think the Falcons have come on leaps and bounds. And at times, that was absolutely brilliant. It wasn't until the very end that Saracens started really racking up the points.
Yeah, so, I would agree with that entirely on the defensive side. I thought they were really... John Wells does their defence, doesn't he?
He's
I thought defensively,
well,
they were brilliant.
They were.
But I think there were some errors that were brought on by man and ball with a sweaty ball.
Yeah.
As it were, man and sweaty... Sweaty man and sweaty ball. there's a movie title there. 18s and over. But I think it was a lot of it. There were actually some real skill errors. So you see, I mean, Farrell just pulling a ball back behind the front line, and it's the ball going down. And there were a lot of crappy skill errors that looked crappy. Sorry, but actually, I think had I been out there, I would have been terrified of getting thrown that ball. So
yeah.
I thought it was a pretty crap game, and I thought that Newcastle's defence was repeatedly outstanding, especially in the conditions and the talent playing against them. But what really butchered it for them was they would defend really, really well for phase after phase after phase, and then somebody would lose concentration and do something silly. So it's not, they weren't actually pulled apart that readily for the first 60 minutes. Yep. They were just, it was a little bit of concentration, but I'd watch their defence and I would think, if they defend like that, just every other week will do, they will be absolutely fine.
Yeah. Oh, their defence. I think they'll be better than Fired. I think
you're right. Yeah.
I think they'll be... they're not top four. They'll be quietly aspiring for top six, but I think they might be a little bit off that.
I think I'm dead with you if you actually completely agree, but I would, as a neutral, I would love to see them top six.
Yeah.
And that's got to cost somebody a spot.
Yeah.
I don't really care who that is. I would love to see them in there.
That is a great question, because this is the weekend that everything returns to normal. Leicester won, Springboks got pumped by New Zealand. So I was like,
Quinn's beat Wasp at Rico.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah,
that's
interesting.
Quinn style win I've ever heard of. Lose to London Irish, beat Wasps. That is Quinn's.
It's like them beating Saris at home last season. Yeah. This is the beginning. Well, hopefully it is. I mean,
but then next week they'll go and put in a bog standard average performance.
I mean, geez, they're good enough. But I mean, I think that's the thing. This is a really lazy, tired statement. But all the teams are good enough, actually.
Yes.
So much of it, I think, comes down to coaching. I think it's really important, and it also comes down to the way different clubs, consciously or unconsciously, approach the psychology of it all. Because remember Justin Harrison saying to me, "Mate, there's no secrets out there. They're all big. They're all fit. Some of them are bigger than you and stronger than you." So it's not about that. All we're doing is preparing our bodies. Our bodies are on equal terms.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, tapping his temple. He said, it's what you do up here.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, and he said, I can tell you now, I'm prepared to die out there in the next 80 minutes. I'd rather not, but I will. And that's why we'll win, you know. And we drew 3-all with Toulouse. we went through, though.
I wonder if it's my cowardice that stopped me making the highest level.
Top 2 inches.
Yeah, my mental.
Do you know, it's interesting. You need genetics. Of course you do. You can't. You know, the average shopkeeper couldn't play tight end in the Prem. But you know, you do see some guys walking around who are freaky specimens. But then you see some who really aren't.
Yeah.
And you see some in major positions who really aren't. You know, I look at someone like Will Welch, and you think, well, you're looking from up in the commentary position on the sideline. Is that a particular, no, you'd say he's probably a normal size Prem back row. You walk up to him and you're like, kidding out, he is
a big unit.
I mean, he's a proper unit.
Yeah.
If he's on the door at a nightclub, you'd think, serious bit of kit. And he's not one of the top 8 biggest blokes on the field.
No,
they're much bigger. So, but there are guys who just aren't freaks. Jackson Ray's not a freak.
No.
He's a big bloke, of course he is.
Yeah.
But he's not a freak.
No.
He's absolutely realising his potential. He's got the genetics, he's got sufficient genetics, but he's absolutely maximising it because his approach and his attitude absolutely propels him forward, you know.
Well, so, someone like Brad Barrett as well, in terms of his physical abilities and his skills, they're not truly exceptional, but in terms of his
leadership,
mental, well, just the physical,
he's a brick,
the mental bit,
the brick with eyes, mate. He's just unbelievably hard.
Yeah,
that's it. He's just tough as you like, and he will run into absolutely anything, and he's got no fear. So
yeah,
that's why he's a high earning top pro.
And captain of one of the, well, is he still club captain? Last year.
One of them is.
Yeah. There you go.
But like, yeah. Probably got about 9 co-captains. That's what you do these days, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Defensive captain.
I never understand all that stuff.
Leadership group. Have you been on a leadership group?
Oh yeah. About 300 of them. Yeah.
I think they're a waste of time.
It's I just feel like if you come in as a coach, give yourself a bit of time, you will find out who the leaders are. And I always think it's one idea is to appoint someone who's really good at speaking to the group.
Yep.
That's a good idea.
Okay.
They've also ideally got to be first choice, you know, regular first choice.
Yeah.
But also, you have to take into account there will always be a couple of players who are uncaptainable, you know, and that's not also always because they're horrible or they're gobshite. Sometimes it's like, how do you captain Martin Johnson?
Yeah.
I was thinking, how do you captain Danny Cipriani?
No, Danny's easy. Danny's easy to captain. I've been on tours. I wasn't his captain, but I've been on tours and that. And he's, you know, he's... Danny,
we just don't know how he's going to. What
Danny's,
he's going to do next.
Danny's what's the word? Delinquency is overplayed. I think. I mean, I'm not in a club environment with him, but if he was that bad, Dai Young would have chinned him by now. So, you know,
yeah.
I think I think you'll find Sipt is all right.
But you know, just in terms of the way he plays, you know, if you've got a real maverick or someone who's just going to do, I mean, how would you go about game planning with Carlos Spencer or Quade Cooper?
Yeah, you're knackered. I mean, we had Butch James, and Butch James wasn't quite like Carlos Spencer, but he was. Butch did what he wanted.
Yes.
Yeah. But he earned that credit because he would. I mean, he was a fucking, am I allowed to swear on this podcast?
Yeah.
He was a fucking maniac, right? A maniac.
Have you ever seen him tackle with arms?
He did sometimes. But he would flat out whack anybody at any point. And, you know, what you earn there by putting yourself in that hard, especially when you're a big money, big name and you're valuable, when you go that hard for the team, do you know what? If you throw a reverse miss and it goes tits up every now and again, you're in credit. But it's when you've been dodging tackles and skipping work and blaming other people, then you start cocking up, then you will find. So I look at, this is all guesswork, but I look at Wasp play and I see Danny Cipriani have the odd, you know, when you try as much as he does, you can have the odd shocker, the odd howler, the odd horror moment. And I never see players turning on him.
Mm.
And I think that must indicate that he works hard enough away from the bright lights that he's in credit.
That's interesting.
Because otherwise, I've played with guys, I won't name them because it's unfair and I haven't asked their permission. I've played with guys who overplay their hand, and they also overplay their hand on a Wednesday, and they turn up to, you know, weights and their flip-flops with a cappuccino, and that pissed me off. It's like, you haven't got credit for that, mate.
Yeah.
You know, so you're not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to go to the gym in flip flops with a cappuccino.
I used to.
That'd be the level.
But I was 20 minutes early, so I was allowed to do that. It's when they arrive on time in their flip flops. That's what used to.
Didn't you boys in Bath just have to yawn and you'd be set upstairs for a coffee?
Well, that was a long time ago. That was early days. Luckily, we had a group that worked hard. So, but we did have a fitness coach in the old days. So, you know, if you looked a bit tired, he'd let you go home.
Really?
Yeah. But in fairness, that was a couple of seasons where we had Michael Foley was our coach and he was brilliant, but he picked his best team every week. And without sounding like a complete bell end, you know, that was the same eight every week for 2 or 3 years, really, as long as we were fit. So we played every game, and there were a lot of games. There was only one prop on the bench then, and tight end's more tiring.
Yeah.
So I would play 80, 80, 80, 80, 75, 80, 80, 80. So there were times that I'd walk in on a Monday and he'd say to me, "You look fucked," and I'd say, "Man, I'm broken."
Yeah.
He'd say, "Right, go home, see you this afternoon."
Yeah.
And you get to training and I put my boots on, he's like, "I've had a word, you're not training." You know, because otherwise you just break.
When you're playing that level and training that level, rest is as important as the actual training and conditioning.
Yeah, 100%, especially the second half of the season.
Would you be interested in seeing rugby tinker around with something like interchanges?
Like rugby league style?
Rolling subs?
Yeah. Are you ready the idea of rolling subs?
No, and I'll tell you why. Because rugby union has... bigger players, and it has more players. I'm stating the painfully obvious, but that means there is just physically less room on the field.
Yeah.
So it becomes, you know, mathematically harder to score, I guess. So I think one of the key, this is why when the scrum gets tinkered with, the first thing I worry about isn't actually the spectacle, because boring scrums bore tits off me as well. But I worry about fatigue, and I think you need the big guys to be as tired as possible, and through honest work, and because that is what creates space.
Yeah.
You know, because if everyone's fresh, I've played in games. I played in a game once where we had one scrum in the first half. It was against Tigers at Welford Road, and I came in at half time, and I'd never hit double figures in 40 minutes in my whole career of tackles, and I was at 11 tackles, none missed. I was at 8 carries. I mean, you guys might have seen me play. That wasn't me. I was a chugger. But our stats were through the roof,
because
and we felt amazing.
Yeah.
And then we had, it was fantastic. It was like, you know, 3-0 or something to Leicester, whatever it was. There was no score, fresh as daisies. Beginning of the second half, first 10 minutes of the second half, we had 3 pushover attempts against Leicester and we nearly got them over, and we went again and again and again. Penalties, yellow card for Garforth. We went again and again and again. And the whole front row was subbed on 55 minutes because we were broken, absolutely broken. And so were they.
Yeah.
So we just finished. So that fatigue is what causes mistakes and space.
So you need it. Completely agree with that. Yeah.
So I mean, I guess the opposite would be trying to limit the amount of subs coming on, because when they empty the bench now, it can make an absolute enormous impact. I mean, personally, I would love to see interchange because I like the idea. I mean, also, it'd make someone like Toulouse incredibly dangerous.
Well, we've seen interchanges when the French doctor just
dishes
out head injury assessments right and centre. Change my props round,
Say la tête, do what you like.
My maybe the most stupid comment ever, but my favourite comment was it Rob Evans?
He was playing Lucy.
Yeah, he stands and goes, "Sir, it doesn't matter who they have."
Yeah, just any old team. You got to take it easy. I remember when I played for Sarries with Julian White. There was a bit of a scuffle at a scrum. It might have been in this game or a different game. Neil Back came in and he had a pop at Julian, and he said, "Fuck off, Big Nose." And he just said Big Nose to Whitey, and we were up against it. Like Roundtree had Julian. Roundtree was doing really well against Julian. Darren Garforth was always really hard for me, so we were really struggling. And Julian was so angry at that one comment. Oh my God! Like it was. To the point where they had an amazing scrum, but we absolutely buried that scrum at Welford Road, and it was like the whole crowd went quiet because they never got treated like that then, and they came right back. Don't worry about that. But it's sort of like always keep your mouth shut. Yeah. Do not want to fuel anybody.
The worst thing is
don't say that, Rob.
Saying something like that. If you can back it up,
yeah, you've got
great.
To back it up.
If you don't back it up,
yeah, but it's all right if you're on the Not if you're at prop, because you've got absolutely no escape from the person you just made angry.
Yeah.
So I used to think, well, do a job on him and keep quiet. For the early part of my career, I gobbed off quite a lot. Because I used to get really excited and pumped. Then I learned pretty quick that you're one comment away from getting introduced to your own colon.
Like, how simple. I imagine that he chats an awful lot.
Yeah, I love that, though. I'm happy for him to do it.
Yeah. There was a couple of bits in the Lions tour where he was, like, right on the edge of losing control, wasn't there?
See Genji's carry again the other day. He's done another massive carry at the weekend. I love these boys. They're animals. They're animals in a gentleman's game, and don't take that out of them. You know.
Yeah, props that can work hard and carry hard are absolute gold. That's not.
Yeah.
I always get confused with Exeter because they have like three or four of the best in the league. Look at lads like Hepburn. Then what do they do exactly with Thomas Francis? How has he got into this group? I mean, he's a good scrimmager.
Got an anchor in there. He's got an anchor. So he's big lump, and when he gets in a decent position, he's rock steady. And what that means is, you can play either way you want. You basically can play right at will from the scrum, which means you can play, in basic terms, away from the opposition scrum half and have a numerical advantage every single time. And if he gets a nudge on, then Exeter have got the numbers and they've got a seven with a head start. So it's just nothing's changed in terms of the value of a tight head. Most of them do a lot more now, but there are some teams that can absorb a big lump like that that's just there to hold it up.
Yeah, I mean that's basically what you must be there for. Just the actual options.
Some teams couldn't absorb him. They don't have the carriers and the tacklers, but Chiefs can, because Chiefs have got what they've developed probably through their training. They haven't developed big lumps because they were born big, these lads, but they've developed a lot of guys with really good power endurance. So look at what Kai Horseman can do. He's 35, 36 or something, you know. But you look at Dave Ewers, he's a very, very big guy, but he contributes a huge amount when he's fit over the course of a whole game. So does Armand.
Armand, the same.
Yeah,
exactly the same.
So Waldron, Simmons now. These are big, powerful men. Yeah, with real good engines. So it's obviously about something to do with the way they train. So that means they can absorb the odd mutant, basically.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Now, just going back to winding people up, did anyone see the Marla Haskell altercation? I've not seen it yet, so
that's great. So Haskell's like doing a ruck inspector job, so he hands over the ruck just looking around. He's got his safe, and Marla just wanders up, grabs his red scrum hat and just pulls him forward on his scrum hat. And Haskell doesn't like it, so he gets up and he gets Marla around the collar, front of his collar on his jersey. And Marla like goes back to grab him, and Haskell does a really, really slick MMA takedown, whips Marla onto his.
Oh, does he?
So Marla's on top, so then Haskell just does a flip on the floor and ends up straight on top of Marla. Marla's smiling the whole time, but he's still got hold of Haskell's scrum hat. Gets broken up, and then Haskell's walking away looking angry, and Joe Marla's having a drink of water, and he just sprays it in Haskell's face from a metre or 2 metres. Haskell loses the plot, and you see his head go. His head's clean off, rolling down the sideline, and his head's off. So you think he's going to chin Joe, but he does it. He does a double-handed throttle of Marla. Marla's grinning the whole time. I think Danny Kerr, apparently, I haven't seen it, but so on Twitter, apparently Danny Kerr sprayed him with water as well to spray Haskell.
Awesome.
So anyway, Haskell gets a yellow card. He says to the ref, "He squirted water in my face and he pulled my scrum cap. It's not allowed." Because he throttled Joe, he gets a yellow. Joe gets off with it, and then at the end of the game, you see them both laughing and having a big cuddle at the end.
Yeah.
It's great.
I tell you what, he has made a run for his own back there. Every team in the Prem is going to be squirting.
Yeah,
fans are going to be squirting with water.
I tell you now, Haskell look at the rig on him. There's a lot of testosterone in there, to get that big. So he is a meg. And there are always people that, when they see someone bigger and stronger than them, they say, he's on the juice. I tell you now, Haskell is an unbelievable dietitian, trainer, professional. There's nothing illegal about that. He's just a beast. And
he was buying, like, he had a guy buying him whole chickens from Sainsbury's.
Yeah, that's
like
him.
18
but he,
or something.
But he also does loads of MMA stuff. Like, Haskell could properly go. Like, he could tear people apart, but he doesn't. So, it's, you know, I think Joe is a properly hard bloke. I love watching Joe, but I think, you know, you're probably quite lucky Has didn't put a little combo in there, because it could have been ugly. But
little armbar.
Yeah, I would like to have seen it, but I'm glad they're friends again.
So you actually corrected me the other night. I said Marlowe is one of the biggest blokes that I've seen. He's not actually that big.
No, he's big and he's hench, but he's in amazing shape. He's an amazing athlete, actually, Joe. So he's very, very flexible, very fit, durable. But he's, I guess something like 115 kilos, 118 kilos, something like that.
Yeah.
And while that is, of course, a big man, and there's very little fat on him, so he's a good nick. I mean, I'm a fat bastard now, but you look at me, I'm 135, so I'm 20 kilos heavier. I'm in shit nick, so it's different. But, you know, he's not a giant loose head, but he's comfortably big. He's comfortably big enough. Kyle Sinclair's not a giant of a man. No. Yeah, these are all big men, so it's relative. But you look at Kyle next to Census Johnston, and there's a vast difference. It doesn't mean one's better than the other; it just means one's bigger than the other. So Census to me is a giant, and you know, you sort of come backwards from there.
Someone like Genge as well.
Yeah,
he's not. He doesn't seem that big.
He's not a muscle bound bookend, is he?
Well, no,
when he's athletic.
He is athletic.
I mean, you could just see the difference
against who?
Abarno.
Yeah.
Just completely different
shapes. So Barno's probably a bit heavier and 4 or 5 inches shorter, and you know, stacked up.
Yeah.
But equally, you've got to run a lot now. So Abarno would have the edge in power, I would say, no doubt, you know, in close quarters, because look at the state and the size of him. But you need to run around for an hour and a bit. You know, Genge and Marla are probably, you know, more suited to that. So.
Just on back. Where do you think that they are this season? Because I thought they were amazing, and now I don't.
Really interesting. I started last season. I said something on the telly which got me a lot of grief, actually. Basically, I'm going off a tangent now. I've had a coffee, so it's your fault. You got it for me. So when you commentate and you've played for a club, so people forget I played over 100 games for Saracens. You know, I played for Bath. So if I commentate on a Bath game and I say Bath are amazing, I'm biased and I'm a twat. And if I say Bath are shocking, I'm overcompensating.
Yeah.
That's the way it works, and I'm all right with that. It's quite the fun. Most people get it and don't give a monkeys. They just agree or they don't. But I commentated on Bath last season, and I think they'd won 5 from 6 or 6 from 7, something like that, at the start of the season. And I remember saying they'd lost to Leicester away, and that was the only game they'd lost and the first 6 weeks. And I remember saying, I just think people should hold their horses a bit, because I don't actually think Bath are playing very well. I don't think they've shown anything yet against a great side that suggests they're going to repeatedly cut apart big sides and dominate big sides. And this season, I'm still holding my breath, really. We don't really know yet, do we? But that game against Saracens, I thought that was something really quite special. Now, when I see a performance like that from any team, not just Bath, because I used to play from any team, and you almost call it, because if Sarries win that game, that's just another win.
Yeah.
But for Bath, that's a massive occasion, right? So they will have expended more emotion than Saracens and energy than Saracens might in winning that game, because Sarries are so used to it.
Yeah.
So it might be a bigger peak for them. And I often wonder, can they sustain something like that, or is it going to lead to a trough?
Yeah.
And it instantly led to a battering at Northampton.
Yeah, you can't peak every week.
So it has to be emotional, it has to be.
Yeah.
Do you worry about the quality of the individuals in the side? Because you look at the Bath side, I don't know, say 3 or 4 years ago, when you've got Eastman, and obviously you had Ford, you had people, this is like peak Burgess time, Ferdsey.
Yeah.
You know, that was
Ferdsey never played. He's the best player, but he never played.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Weird, isn't it?
You look at them now, they're not as good as him in terms of individuals, certainly.
Do you think the same when you look at them?
No, I'm not so sure I agree with that. So you're taking Fordy out of there, but you've now got kind of two, you've got 1A and 1B for different styles with Priestland and Burns. But you've got like Rocco, you've got Watson, you've got JJ, you've got Faletau in there.
Yeah, that's true.
You've got some
Underhill, Francois Lowe, Matt Garvey.
Yeah.
You know,
brilliant.
You've got
boys.
Henry Thomas when he's fit, Nathan Catt are really, really great players.
Yeah. Charteris in there as well.
Khan Photo Elite.
No,
yeah,
Photo
Elite is class.
Yeah. You've got some quite good players in there.
Yeah.
I think quietly, Photo Elite, might be their most important player. He just holds the whole thing together.
Although I thought Chris Cook looked great in round one, but I mean, yes, I think Fotoli's a massively important player. In terms of Bath overall, where I think you can't, sometimes you train too hard and people get injured. Mm. Sometimes you do what you've always done and in bad luck people get injured. Mm. So I think they've had a bit of bad luck. So from what I understand from the Bath boys, they don't get frogged and beasted. They train very hard, but they don't do anything mindless. There's all thinking behind it.
Yeah.
Like, I think they've had some bad luck with injuries,
particularly in the front row.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, there seems to be I don't know. This is assumption really. There seems to be a reluctance to spend money in some of the less glamorous positions there.
Okay.
And I think in some positions they don't. When everyone's fit, they don't need to. So you don't need to replace Nathan Catt. But he does get injured every now and again. For me, he's your frontline loose head.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Brilliant player. But your second in choice, I think Benno Abano, he's actually putting a really, really good shift in. He's playing really well. But playing five or six good games and playing 150, 160 good games is very, very different.
Yeah.
So I feel like they, had they spent, being crude about it, had they spent a load of money in the front five, because with Atwood injured, suddenly you lose a lot of weight from that front row. And Underhill is the first, seems like the first proper dominant hitter they've got. Since Atwood got injured, which would be handy for them because Atwood was really the only guy who was burying people backwards regularly. So I think your front five is so important in this league, and that hasn't changed with the little scrum tweaks. And I feel like Bath aren't lightweight. I think they've got a very good front five, but when one or two guys get injured, there's a bit of a gulf in experience and quality between the first and second choice.
Yep.
So I would be inclined, as you'd imagine, spend more money there, you know, before I start signing centres and talk. You read on the internet they're talking to Ben Teo for £50 million a year, whatever it is. I'd be more inclined to buy a couple of bookends personally.
Yeah,
absolutely right. Absolutely. I liked it when they had the balance between Weber and Batty. I thought that was like their best looking pack.
Tom Dunn is, difficult. When you say get your throwing right, it's not his throwing. It's sometimes his throwing, sometimes a line out. But he is I would just. A friendly piece of advice would be to keep your eyes on him, because I think he's potentially a really special player.
But they also signed Jack Walker as well from Leeds.
Yeah, he was injured all last year.
Yeah, so
he's properly good.
Yeah, because he was captain of England under 20s for a couple of years, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's properly good.
Yeah,
but then I think one of these guys might come to the fore and dominate and become an international class hooker, and that's great. But I just think, and this is like proper armchair, couple of pints, know it all type stuff. If you've got as much money to spend as Bath clearly have on players, then anyone is open to you. So Census Johnston is open to you.
Yeah.
You know, Bismarck's open to you.
Yeah.
Beast Mutwarira is open to you.
Yeah.
These guys are available. Nicola Mass you could get on a couple of years. You know, whatever it is, maybe not him. You know, these guys are available because you have the money to spend them. If you are, I don't know, London Irish or Worcester, these guys might not be available.
Yeah.
So if you've got the option, I always feel like, I remember Richard Cockerell saying to me years ago, do what you want. You might win a few big games, you might win a title without a front five, but you won't win many.
Yeah.
If you want to create a proper legacy, you need, you know, you need a dominant front five, repeatedly dominant front five, because then everybody looks better. It's easier for everyone.
Yeah, it makes it easier for your talented backs to do what they want to
do. Yeah, and you got, and suddenly you got Faletau, Underhill, Garvey and Lowe on the front foot. You got Freddie Burns and JJ on the front foot, and Banners on the front foot. You know, Khan is constantly picking up ball moving forward.
Yeah.
Who do you think has the best collection of front rows? Just as a unit. So like, I'd put Exeter fairly high up there.
Yeah, I would.
Many names.
Yeah, but they got, you know,
as a unit, they're brilliant.
Yendo, I think, is a really good player. Cowan Dickey, I think, is very special.
Why have we not seen more of him?
Injured, gets injured a lot.
Yeah.
I think Ben Moon is massively underrated. He's a really good player.
So he toured with the Saxons last summer.
Did he?
I think. And he just looked brilliant. Like, work rate and
scrimmaging. He does everything. He can do everything. Yeah. He's really good. So yeah, they've got, you know, Francis and Greg Holmes and Murray Lowe, and Rimmer's a good, really good player as well. They're very good. Who's got the best? Oh God, that's a great question, that.
So best starting props.
Well, Saracens have got, on the tight end, they've got Cock and Fagajo. They've got Tolofua, Jamie George, Skolpritz,
yeah.
On the loose end, they've got Baz Barrington, who's a brilliant scrummager and he's in good form, and Mako, who might be the best loose head in the world.
Yeah.
I reckon Sarri's might be in the top one.
Yes. I think when you go through it like that,
yeah,
they're a different level.
The guy that you're not mentioning, who is a lovely bloke, I'm just going to give him a quick shout out, is Kieran Longbottom.
Yeah, I don't know Kieran, actually.
Really, really good bloke.
Is he?
Yeah. And weirdly, I never actually met him when he came on sale. So I'm annoyed that they let him go, really.
Did he have a lot of injuries, or just not, did he not get picked?
He did. I think he had an Achilles. Yeah, was it Achilles or something like that?
Yeah, but they've let, apparently he wasn't big enough to do what they needed at sale.
Yeah, but hang on. You know, it's one of those, isn't it? Because Kobelas isn't that big. Everyone thinks he is because he's great. But he's not that big. You know, he's great. But the new guy, what's his name? Tarus?
Yes.
Tarus. Yeah. He's not a huge bloke. I mean, he's quite big, but, you know.
A huge bloke. Will Griff John. Did you hear this guy?
So they signed him from Doncaster. Yeah. Tighthead prop.
He just wanders around like some colossus. He's enormous.
Is he any good?
I've not seen him play yet.
There's a lot of big lads about. Take a walk down the road in Philly here.
Yeah.
You'll see a lot of big dudes walking around, but you wouldn't fancy him for 80 minutes in the Prem, I think.
And Sale have got a real bad track record of massive props not being very good.
Yeah.
Tony Buckley, Aves.
Yeah.
What? Aves is brilliant.
Well, you were
Aves went to Toulon.
You?
Yeah. Wonderful player. Yeah, something quite interesting about like bigger blokes. I went over to watch the A League game, Sale Jets versus Wasps.
You love Sale, don't you?
They're just a good squad.
Hang on, you went to the A League game in your own time.
Yeah.
Well done.
But Sale had like a big.
Their under 12s are playing Tuesday night. Apparently, they can get back inside.
I'm there, mate. The Wasps literally picked kids. Okay, just 17-year-old heroes absolutely everywhere, from all sorts of directions. Sale had people like Helani Lika, George Knott started, Dave Seymour, Josh Charnley.
Brutal.
Weber
started. Wasps battered them. Absolutely battered them.
Did they?
Yeah, and the speed of the game. So like the older senior guys would be better taking it into contact. Wasps just ran them off the field.
This is a tangent, but my first or second ever game of men's rugby was for Saracen's second team when I was 18, and we had a load of kids playing. It was me. Well, Greg Botman was our hooker, who was like 53 by then, but the rest of us were kids, and they put him in to look after me basically. And the Bath second team, the second team pack, I'm not going to bore you two, I might not remember some, but was Dave Hilton.
Yep.
Dave Hilton, Mark Regan,
yeah.
John Mallett, Steve Borthwick, Martin Haag, Richard Webster, the others aren't quite coming to me, I can't quite remember. It might have been Ben Clark. It was seven internationals and Borthers. But they were established internationals.
Except for
Shep Mallett, who had John Mallett.
Nick Mallett, sorry,
John Mallett, Nick Mallett's the coach.
Ah, right.
Anyway, it was this mega mat, and we actually did a really good job on them, and I remember the main reason being because we were fueled by fear.
Yeah.
But we were desperate for the shot at them, and they didn't want to be there. They wanted to play first team. So remember, I played against these internationals, and I was like, this was on a Monday night. I remember Sir Francois Pienaar was our coach, and he said, "How was it off?" I played the 80 minutes and came off. How was it? And I said, I wasn't being chopsy. I said, mate, that was easy. That was an easy game of rugby. It felt amazing. And he's like, right, well, rest up because you're starting on Saturday. We're going to give you a debut on Saturday.
Awesome.
When I hit my first scrum at first team level, I was like, holy shit, that's different. They're trying now.
Did you ever play with Tom French or meet Tom?
No, I played against Frenchie.
I just love that story. That
it's great, eh? Yeah.
Was it training one day? Like, yeah, you're going to start what the Hurling Cup final? Yeah, you're in.
Yeah, in one hit gone against the best tight end in the world, and he did an amazing job.
He did.
Yeah.
I mean, that must just be a whole game.
Have you seen him now?
Adrenaline. No.
He's like 9 stone lighter. He's completely different.
Wow.
He's a completely normal sized human being.
Yeah, I looked him up on Wikipedia, and his Wikipedia entry is like two lines. Tom French wants to play rugby. The end.
Yeah, he works in a bank now or something like that. Works for a bank or a broker or something like that. But I went to a WASC thing recently. I went to their sesquicentennial dinner. Correct, lads. Sesquicentenary.
Oh, nice,
150
nice.
Years.
Huh?
Anyway, and,
I'm trying to work out what
I was hosting a dinner, so I had to learn that word. And I still fucked it up. Yeah.
How many things are you hosting a week? Because it seems like you just never stop.
I do. Some weeks I do one. Some weeks I do three.
What have you done over here? Have you done any hosting?
No, pure Channel 5 and BT Sport. So I did both on the Saturday, and that's everyone always laughs and says, "Oh, double bubble," but the truth is, it's really good fun because you're having fun the whole time, but you're doing a link, so you're doing your little chat to the camera and it's live or whatever, and as soon as you finish you have a different producer coming on and say, "Unplug now, you've got to get upstairs now, go," and I get up to comms and they're like, right, my phone rings, I'm sitting in comms, 12 minutes till kickoff. I've done my prep, but I'm rereading the teams, I've got my eyes out and borrowing Nick Mullins' binoculars to check out a couple of players, and I want to see this Trevor Davison warming up, this prop for Newcastle. So I'm doing that and I get a phone call. It's like, "We need you now, back down pitch side." Like, right, I've now got 8 minutes till kickoff. We need you now for a pre-match link. I was like, right, shit. So I'm running down the stairs at the stadium from 93 degrees or something, sweating my tits off. I do this link. We have one shot at it. Go. Run back up. Get stopped by security. Left my pass by the camera. So I take my pass off for the camera. I run back up. Game starts. Then at half time, as soon as you finish, it's like, right, a little break at half time. Tap on the shoulder. "We need you out here now." And they've set up a whole nother shot. So I'm legging it down the end of the corridor to do the thing, the view over the river. Do the link. Run back in. Finish the game. So right, run downstairs, do the post-match link for Channel 5 while the players are still on the field, so it looks kind of natural and whatever it is, and looks recent. And as soon as I finish, BT are like, "Right, we need you over here now in the back room for a press conference." I was like, right. And you get to the end and you're like, fuck, I'm not complaining about it, but it was
money.
In a taxi on the way back, I was a broken man, and then went out and got pissed.
It's well-earned beers.
Yeah. Actually,
we were working almost as hard as you were really up in VIP.
Yeah, it looked nice up there.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Real tough.
Well looked after.
Did you get free booze up there?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, well done.
It's brilliant.
You've had a great weekend then. But I didn't come out last night, did I? I flaked a little bit, so I'm sorry about that. But I'm older than you boys, you know.
I've got to say, last night, or yesterday, whole day, was one of the best days out I have had in a long time.
Was it?
Oh, great fun.
It's brilliant. It's
really good fun.
It's amazing. You went to the Reading Food Market.
Reading Food Market was brilliant. So we had some food, had a few beers.
Dug in.
Watched the first half of the Eagles game. And then we watched the second half in... it's the oldest pub in Philadelphia.
Not Fieldhouse, across the road from...
No, but it was just rammed. Everyone wearing an Eagles shirt. And the atmosphere was incredible.
Bird game tomorrow. Bird game.
We, for an hour and a half, absolutely hated Kansas City.
We wanted
them all dead.
The Chiefs, bastards.
Screw the Chiefs,
bastards, they're all cheats anyway.
They were definitely cheating
Chiefs
yesterday.
Suck. it's a good time.
I sincerely hope that this event takes off because I want to come back to America at least every other year.
Yeah, we've had a chat next year and we want it in LA ideally next year.
LA.
You can just text Danny Cipriani and find out the 10 best places to go, can't you? Ideally, WASC will play out and we can just hang out with Lindsay Lohan and I don't know who are other cool people.
LA. I can't imagine that being like a rugby town. I mean,
I played rugby for England in LA.
Did you really?
On tour we played. It wasn't a test.
It was a
midweek game, so an A game, I guess. But on England tour in 2001, we played at UCLA against the Eagles team. I think I scored a try from about 40 metres. Why don't I go on about it?
What was the Churchill Cup?
No, it wasn't that. It was a cap tour. It was an England tour. 2001, when the Lions were away, we were away with England in US, Canada, and Japan. What a tour!
Nice.
Yeah, last night out in Tokyo.
Yeah, so 2001, right, was the Australia tour, was it not?
2001 was Australia, yeah.
Right. So that is the one, isn't it, where Paul Grayson came in as a kicking consultant, I think he might have even played. And if I'm right, Ollie Barkley had his first game for England before he played for Bath.
Yeah, that was that tour. That was against US.
And he started at 9, actually.
I played tight end in that game, which I didn't like, but got away with it because it was US. Yeah. And on that trip, we played against Canada, and it was Roundtree starting a loose head and Julian White at tight. And I came on to replace Julian at tight, and Roundtree was laughing as I came on. And he was like, good luck, mate, because we both hated tight head. Good luck. Don't let the team down, mate. And he kept patting his chest saying, Queen and Country. Don't let him down. Because I was against a guy called Rod Snow. And Rod Snow was quality. Yeah. Like, and he was known around the circuit for being a properly good loose head. Like, you know, he played for Newport, and he could have gone to any Prem club and started. He was proper top-notch loose head. And we had one scrum where he basically slipped, and I slipped, and the ref let it play on. And then right at the end, we had this move, and we're on the left-hand side, and it was like, right, I need a big right shoulder, and whoever it was at 10, I can't remember, comes in, or Josh Lucy ran, and he goes, right, I need a big right shoulder flats. I was like, yeah, no problem. And Rand Wigg was laughing again. He's like, yeah, you get right shoulder flats, don't look in. And he would, if a loose head moves forward a couple of steps, it makes it really hard for the tight head to get a right shoulder up, to set, you know, to give that advantage, so their 7 can't get away, and their 9 can't get away. So Roundtree was like, I'll just set a couple of steps, you'll get it forward, won't you?
Yeah.
We hit the scrum, and Roundtree was like, I'll go one step flat. He was taking the piss the whole time. And I was so scared that I buried Rod Snow in this scrum. I absolutely pumped him, went with his massive right shoulder, and we scored in the corner, and it was like, and everyone was like, oh, flats. And I knew, and I was not celebrating at all. And all I was doing was looking at the clock, and as soon as we scored the try, Roundtree runs straight back over to me, and he's looking, pointing at the clock, and he said, time for one more, because I'm thinking, please blow the final whistle, because Rod is going to snap me in half in a minute. And the whistle went. I was like, yes, yeah. I'll never play against him again.
Thank God.
It wasn't the same tour, was it? Where Dan Barr absolutely
same game.
That was
Julian White.
That was a tremendous game.
Same game. Never, ever, ever punch Dan Barr.
Oh my word! you would class Julian White as a relatively hard individual.
I'd say very, very, very hard. Very.
And then there's Dan Barr, different universe,
different gravy. And then you compare someone like Dan to an actual fighter, a trained fighter, and you realise that rugby players are not good, not talented at all.
Well, is Dan Barr still at Wasps?
Yeah, yeah.
Is he still
all of him?
Is he still lifting more?
Yeah,
more than
he's a joke. I mean, the rig on him is a joke. He's a really, really good human being as well. Just very, very aggressive guy. When he was playing, not anymore.
That might be a rugby dungeon.
Right? I played against Cardiff when he played. We played 2 games against Cardiff. We were at Sarries and we were flying. We played 2 games against Cardiff, who were rubbish, and they beat us home and away in 2 weeks. They were just at it, and I remember the 2 reasons they won were Dan Barr and Jonathan Humphreys, the hooker. They were absolute. You know, when you're like, we're flat out pros. We got a team full of top players and a couple of youngsters like me. We had Grewcock, Scott Murray, P&R, Hill, Bracken, Alan Penneau. We had, you know, Tim Horan. We had an amazing team. And you're like, these boys have dominated people at the top level for years.
Yeah.
Not me, the other lads. And you play against guys like that, and you think, on that day, there is no one. The All Blacks wouldn't have beaten Cardiff, is what it felt like. Because it was Dan Barr and John Humphreys. They were just fucking animals.
Amazing. Dan Barr used to hit like an exorcist.
Just animals. Remember Humps just like screaming. Screaming in rucks, trying to kill people. Like, he was just on it, you know.
He's doing some really good work at the moment up in
Scotland.
In Glasgow, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. He's a hell of a guy. He's my rugby hero, so we won't go too far on him. It'll get a bit sycophantic.
Yeah. I was going to say something else then. Shall we talk about next week's games? Because we've so far got David Flatman, who works for BT and for Channel 5, Dragon Move, and we're spoken about a Sale A-League game. So that's a good use of resources.
Yeah.
Shall we talk about next week's games and see who we fancy to go where and do what?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Chiefs against Wasps down at Sandy Park. I think that'll be a good crack.
Revenge mission for Wasps.
Yeah, an interesting one, isn't it? And they're buoyed by the final result last season, and they're buoyed by getting beaten at home at the weekend. Oh, nice. That's an interesting one, that. But I
do you think Wasps might be a little bit soft?
No, I don't actually. But what I do think, soft is Yes and no, actually. Yep. So no is my initial answer, because do I think they've got lads who won't stand and fight? And I don't, actually. But what I do think they're lacking is a dominant defensive line. So I think they concede, well, I know they concede a huge number of metres per game. Mm. Without missing that many tackles. So going into last weekend, their tackle success rate was just below 90%, which is great. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's where you want it. You want it 90%. You want to be missing, you know, you want to be 90 plus, really. But they're at 90%, which is, you can win the title on that.
Yeah.
So they're not missing tackles. They're just soaking up yards.
Yeah.
And they're giving away. They concede a lot of offloads, a lot of meters on the game line. So they don't have a particularly dominant aggressive line, which is why Hass coming back in will help them. And more games Nathan Hughes and Launchbury play, the better for them. And,
yeah.
and when they get Thomas Young back, that will help.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're soft. I just think they're brutal to play against when they've got the ball, of course. I think they're too easy to play against and make yards against when they haven't got the ball.
Yeah.
And if they, I think they will address that, because I mean, Dai Young keeps saying they're looking at that. But I think they're too easy to make meters against.
Yeah. So someone who had a field day against them the other week in the Worcester game, Ben Teo,
was running
over people. Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
So I would just wonder if they lack the ability to grind out results against bigger teams. I think Exeter will be, you know, the worst possible team for them.
Yeah, do you know, I don't think you get to the final if you can't dig in.
Mm.
I don't think you get there.
I think they almost suffer from having too much talent. So, because they're so talented, they don't necessarily need to work as hard as, say, you know, Saracens do on their structure. And their,
I don't know. You might be right, and there will be a website somewhere that tells us if we're right or wrong here. But I feel like they've got a lot of players who do a lot of work in that team. So you look at the work rate of Tommy Taylor, Matt Mullin, Launchbury, Ian and Mile, Haskell, Young. Nathan Hughes does a load of work now.
Yeah.
He looks fantastic at the end of last season and this season, start of this season. He does a load of work. You know, Robson is everywhere. Gopeth is everywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, you see Elliot Daly, especially when he's playing in the midfield, he's everywhere. And so I don't necessarily buy into that. I think they've got, whether it's conscious or not, they have got, in their recruitment and their selection, they have an attacking bias, which is absolutely fine.
Mm.
It doesn't mean they can't defend. It means they're not as good as, you know, so they pick Gopeth, Sarri's pick Barrett.
Yeah,
and that's all you need to know.
Yeah, those two players at 12 are night and day.
Yeah, and it's funny, if I'm watching a game, to be honest with you, I'd rather watch Jimmy Gopeth.
Yeah.
If I'm picking a team, I'd have Brad Barrett over, I'd have him over Marnonu. I mean, seriously, you know, seriously, he's everything to that team, and he's the one player. You know, Marrow's pretty special, a lot of special players in that team, and you think, how good is Owen Farrell? I mean, he's a world 15 player.
Yeah.
But how do you replace Brad Barrett?
Because
I honestly don't know how you replace that.
But he's so fundamental to the way that Saracens play.
And he's bright. He's a bright defender. You know, he doesn't just whack people. He's bright, and he very rarely cuts a good line and gets, you know, hits anyone head on. He's a really big, really strong bloke, and he runs hard at forearms. You know, he's a bright player and knows what he's good at and does it repeatedly. You know.
Just before we go on to the games, back onto Saracens, how do you think they are going to sort out this salary cap issue, which are going to have?
This is one of those things you should never say as someone who's in the media. But are we still talking about salary caps? Because it seems like, I'm not berating you for asking the question. It's just like, no one's going to be punished for it. No one's being punished for it. No one's going to get punished for it. So is there almost a license to hose all over it now? Or are we just pretending that everyone's playing it legal? Because look at the squads out there.
I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and say people are keeping to the salary cap.
So do I.
And then, if they're not,
but there are a lot of top players taking really small, reduced salaries to come and play here. Now, is our league that appealing that they're willing to take a shitload more money they can get elsewhere? I think that's a bit ambitious.
Well, do you know, I'm not sure if I agree with you there, because the only other place you can go really is France.
Not if you're Southern Hemisphere.
But you're not
Japan.
Yeah, Japan would be an option.
Japan's bigger money than France.
Bigger money.
But you might end up assembling photocopiers on Tuesdays.
Not anymore, you don't. You end up playing 12 games a year on shitloads of money.
Yeah.
And when you come back to Aussie Springbok Kiwi duty, you're fresh because you've been Skyping the fitness coach, running on a All Blacks fitness protocol, and you are Jerome Kano, and you step back in and dominate because you've only played 12 games in the last 8 months.
Yeah, and you're fresh as a daisy.
And you've you know, you haven't got a mortgage anymore because you're Jerome Kano, but you've paid off, you've paid everything off, you've got a shitload of money. So
yeah.
The Premiership is a brutal league, and it's probably the hardest league in the world to play in.
100%.
So it's the hardest. I think physically, the French league is more brutal. So maybe, but I think in terms of the standards you have to deliver, plus physicality, the physical demands, I think the Premiership is harder. Purely physically, I think the French is harder, but actually, you are just permitted to be shit quite a lot in France.
Yeah, away games. 50% of the games.
I love the French league, but almost all of it is turgid.
It's awful to watch.
Loads of it's great. Loads of it
I don't understand who goes to watch it, but people do go watch it.
They love it, and they love their... You know, don't know if the Eagles are that good, are they? But people love their team,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And I like that. You know, I'm from Kent. You go and watch Gillingham, and loads of people are going there. And all my mates used to go and watch Leighton Orient. So what are you doing, lads? You know, but they love it. So
how are Saracens going to get over this salary cap issue?
Well, maybe they're... Look, I hope that they are completely legal and they've just got some amazing players who say, look, I'm willing to earn half what I could earn to play for Saracens because the environment's great. In terms of getting over it, there's... I don't know. I don't know anything about it, and I'm not being coy. I don't know anything about it. So it's an unqualified view. But they're, you know, if you're running a rugby club, there are a million ways to pay somebody. So if I'm charging you $100,000 to come on your podcast rather than one cup of milky coffee, big cut that. If I'm charging you $100,000 and you've only got a $50,000 budget, but your mate from home that you went to school with. He's a millionaire, or you can only pay me $50,000 legally, but you've got the money to pay me. You can give your mate $50,000 on the golf course in an envelope, and he can pay me $50,000 tomorrow. So this is not difficult, you know. I'm not saying that's what goes on, but it's a piece of piss. If you want to pay somebody loads more, get your rich mate to pay him, and you pay him back. I mean, you know, is that not how the world works? Are we being real here, you know?
So I think a lot of that definitely used to go on. I hope there's less of it going on now.
I hope so, yeah.
What they've got to do is just literally only pay the players for rugby, which sounds obvious, right? But then the players have got to sort out their own commercial side, because that way you could actually fit in with the salary cap just like they do in the
NFL. So you don't pay image rights?
No.
Yeah, but you need every rugby, professional rugby team in the world to buy into that. Because then if Saracens or Bath or Northampton or Leicester or Worcester stop paying image rights, all the big players will leave, because they'll be losing half their money. They'll all go. Because if you can get $150,000 a year at Saris, but not doing image rights, or you can get $150,000 at Worcester plus $150,000 image rights, see you later. You're only earning big for 7 or 8 years.
But if you can get, I don't know, $300,000 from Saracens to play, or whatever Mario Itoje gets next, $60 million
$1 million.
Easy.
Yeah.
Surely his better option is to manage his image rights himself.
That's potentially where it could go.
I don't know what you mean by managing his rights himself.
As in, instead of the club pay you to use them, you use them. You license them through your agent or your money manager or whoever it may be.
But then, so you're attracting sponsors to pay you for your image.
Yeah.
But they're doing that anyway. They're doing all of that. They've got absolutely free reign to do that and earn as much as they can on top of all the money they get from the club. So you're doing exactly the same, but getting $100,000 less, you know.
So we've got NFL on in the background there, and there are no kit sponsors. The reason that there's no kit sponsors on the jersey is so the players can go out and get their own sponsors, and it doesn't clash with their own sponsors.
But the players won't accept that. They'll leave the league because there aren't the numbers watching rugby to generate the sponsorship deals that they need.
It might be good for a handful of ads, actually.
So if you think, I've got no idea what Marrow earns, and I don't care. Whatever they pay him, he's worth it.
Yeah.
If he earns a load of money, and they say, right, we're going to pay you half of that, but you can go and sell yourself for a kit deal. By the way, he can sell himself for that kit deal anyway, on top of the club thing. Yeah. So there's no point. But actually, he's not going to go and get that 50% of salary back from a kit deal because they just aren't the numbers.
Mm.
You know, do you know what? There are top footballers not getting massive kit deals. So that, you know, you find out things along the way and whatever. And I wouldn't ever, not being coy, but I wouldn't ever, not being, I'm not trying to be that annoying guy that says I know something you don't know. But I'm not being protectionist, but I haven't asked permission to talk about it, so I won't. I know a couple of kit brands who pay rugby players quite a lot of money, and you know, it is a lot of money. And they say this is our fourth biggest deal in the UK. So now, who are your biggest deal? Well, we got two golfers, a runner, and him. And what about footballers? And it's like, oh, we've got a couple of footballers, but they're all on. You know, they're all on $30,000 a year or $35,000 a year plus kit.
Mm.
And that's why that's a lot of money to a lot of people. It's a mistake to think that Premier League footballers are all getting £500,000 to wear the same right boots, because they ain't. Most of them are just getting kit.
Yeah.
Most of them don't get paid.
Mm. What would be your advice to lads transitioning out of the game then and looking to do other things, whether it be
I mean, that's five podcasts in itself.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, it, you know, it's one of those things that it's like breaking your ribs, right? Everyone imagines it's sore, and when you say it's sore, they believe you.
Yeah.
But when you get it, when it happens to you, you realise how fucking sore it really is.
Yeah.
And you don't know until you've been there. And that doesn't mean you're not allowed to empathise or there's no point in you guys having an opinion, whatever. It means that I had one of the soft, aside from someone who's got a zillionaire, you know, mum and dad, mm-hmm. or a family business you can step into. And I had, apart from those guys, I had a really soft landing. But I worked really, really hard for my soft landing, mm-hmm. and I still found it really, really hard.
Were you doing anything media-y or doing outside gigs?
I did 5 years of TV before I retired. I did it every single time I could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some guys do it differently now. I never, ever did it. So I'd look at our schedule. Playing and training was always first. But I would look at a Sunday game, mm-hmm. and I would think, Christ, I don't like Sunday game because I can't do TV on a Friday or a Saturday because it's before game. And I was unhappy, not happy to do that. So Friday night games, I was all over Saturday night, and I was like, get me work.
Yeah.
And my agent, Michelle, pushed me, and still does, pushed me so hard to work. I didn't want to do a TV. I had no interest in doing TV. She signed me up for columns and all sorts of stuff. I tell you how, what it looks like to be that player who's preparing for my life afterwards. Playing a game at the Rec, my parents have driven 3 hours to watch the game with my little brother in his wheelchair, and it's a big occasion and all that. And after the game, I know that I have 35 minutes to file a 650 word match report, article about the game, not a match report. They've got, you know, player's eye view to the Independent on Sunday.
Mm.
So I literally run to my parents, I give them a kiss, and I say, I've got to write a column.
Got to work.
And I run into the changing room after the game, get the debrief from Steve Meehan, it was. Get my laptop already set up in the ref's changing room.
And that is where that story is unfortunately going to have to come to an end, because the batteries died on JB and Phil. So you'll have to hear the rest of that story the next time that I get substituted for Flats. Thank you very much, David Flatman. Nice one, JB and Phil. Thank you very much for listening.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Subscribe, because we'll have another podcast coming your way very, very soon. Let the boys play.